Whitey.
House Committee on Revenue for March 3rd, 2009 will come to order. This morning we have an information meeting from the Governor's Task Force on Federal Forest Payments and County Services. Do you want to introduce it, Paul? I think I did it. All right. Gentlemen.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tim Nesbitt, Deputy Chief of Staff for the Governor. And I served as Chair of the Task Force on Federal Forest Payments and County Services. And with me is Mike MacArthur, who you know from Association of Oregon Counties. I'd like to give you an overview of what we delivered to you in book form several weeks ago. And that is the findings and recommendations of the task force, which convened in the in November of 2007 after we had just gotten a one-year reauthorization of these federal forest payments and were looking ahead with the prospect of no further reauthorization. So we went through kind of a roller coaster year last year as the task force met to look at options for the counties to be able to preserve services should they lose these federal forest payments in what's now the current fiscal year 08-09 in September, late September of last year, as part of the first federal relief package. Our congressional delegations succeeded in getting a four-year phase-down reauthorization added to that package, and it was signed into law by then-President Bush in the first week of October. So a lot of counties by that point, however, had again cut their budgets, had again reduced services. And although it was a godsend that the four-year reauthorization was approved, we're now at a period where we're already in a phase down. And by the end of your next biennium, I know everybody's focused on balancing the budget in 09-11, but before we get out of 09-11, counties will be looking at a severe reduction in 11-12. And then in 12-13, complete loss of these federal forest payments. We want to give you an overview of what it looked like when we were looking over the cliff and peering into the abyss of the county's own fiscal crisis and some of the ideas we came up with to address that situation, which has been postponed but not solved. In this report, we added up the magnitude of the losses that counties and schools will suffer with the loss of these payments. And these are annual numbers, $33 million a year for schools, and close to, it actually comes out to $210 million total for the counties, with the payments for Federal Forest Service lands going to county roads, and the payments from ONC lands, mostly in Western Oregon, going to county general funds. And many counties are hit in both categories. Here's a representation with those blue lines showing the level of support in this program. And really, those blue lines represent the amount of revenue that counties were getting about two decades ago in the form of shared harvest receipts from these federal lands within their boundaries. And then as logging was curtailed in the early 90s, we saw it drop off to about 10% of what it had been in that higher period. And so this graph shows in the rose-colored bars what's left of harvest receipts from the logging activity on those federal forest lands. The blue bar, originally calibrated to kind of continue to make up the revenues that the counties had lost in the form of what are called safety net payments, show that amount of revenue now coming from the feds in safety net payments rather than logging receipts, and then shows the phase down in the dark blue that we're seeing now under the four-year reauthorization. So by federal fiscal year 11, which would be our 2011-2012, there's the last of the payments. It's less than half of what's now being received, and then in fiscal year 12-13, the elimination of those payments although I'm sure there'll be another debate in the Congress about continuing them. But this is what's now scheduled, and it's most likely that if there's a continuation, it won't be at the high end of those blue bars, it'll be at the low end. But once those payments go away, we revert to what we call the residual harvest receipts, what's left of these shared receipts from logging that does take place on federal forest lands. How do revenue losses of this magnitude compare to, for instance, what the state was looking at in 0103, which is now beginning to look like deja vu in the magnitude of what you're looking at in 0911? You saw a 20% loss of revenue from the forecasted levels back in 0103. Those red bars on the right show you for the hard-hit counties. I'll define that for you in a moment. The magnitude of the revenue losses they're facing in their general funds or road funds, and in some counties it's in both. So we use that 20% as a very rough benchmark to focus further on where the counties will be suffering the greatest challenges. We then end up identifying 24 counties who we call the hard-hit counties, whose general funds or road funds are more than 20% of what's now budgeted, and that's not 20% of what they had expected to receive. That's 20% of what they're actually spending in the current fiscal year. We also went from that relative measure to a more absolute measure, and we benefited from the work of Yamhill County Administrator John Krosick, who helped us quantify what does it really take, what does it cost to run a county, to provide the kinds of basic services at the county level that we expect to see from a county. He quantified that according to the size of the county, but you see it's somewhere between $150 for a large population per capita, $155 for a large population county like Lane, all the way up to close to $300 in the more sparsely populated counties per capita basis. And this really is the amount of money needed to run bare-bones county services without libraries, with a minimum of sheriff's patrol coverage, with just the basics in terms of public health and safety. So that's another measure which allowed us then to identify counties who, when they take these hits to their budgets, will either immediately or as soon as they draw down the reserve, some of them have 1, 2, 3 years worth of reserves that they can use to spread over that amount of time, which ones really will be falling below that bare bones level where we wouldn't expect they'd be able to continue to maintain just the basics of county services. And we list those there as the crisis counties, and on the cover of our report, they're all colored in red. The ones who are colored in blue here we call unsustainable. They can get by for a year or two or three because of their reserves, but not four or five. Those in red will be facing, will be going below that minimum level of funding needed to maintain that minimum level of service within a year or two. And we highlight for you the different impacts there according to road fund impacts and general fund impacts. And our Eastern Oregon counties remind us that a road fund crisis for them is also a general fund crisis because they're going to have to maintain a certain level of service, and in some cases they're going to have to move general fund money into roads. So there's the depiction on the map. How do we solve this kind of a problem? We looked at it in four categories: what counties and county taxpayers can do to help themselves, what the state and state taxpayers can do to help the counties, what the federal government can do, and then what better management of federal forests could accomplish. Beginning at the county level, we have certain constraints. We have the low property tax rates locked in by Measure 50. So not surprisingly, many of these counties have low tax rates because back in the early 90s, they relied less on property taxes, and they budgeted more with their harvest receipts. Then Measure 50 came along and locked in those low property tax rates. We have the continuing challenge that you've heard of, the changed property ratio, where the growth in the valuation of property now is severely discounted and produces less of a revenue dividend, even when we do get that economic growth. For example, a new $300,000 home in Coos County generates less than $200 per year in county taxes. And we have other examples in our report of where economic development has succeeded and yet where the both the business taxes and the residential taxes for the workers at a particular plant in Douglas County. We call out barely support one sheriff's deputy for the entire county, even though it was an economic development success story. But the counties do have options. We did find in our report that if you add up the amount of taxation going on at the local government level under Measure 5 and 50, where we have that $10 limit under Measure 5, counties and their cities and their taxing districts are using less than half of their allowable tax capacity. Now, that means they have capacity, but they have to go to their voters to use it. And they can do so by enacting temporary local option taxes with the approval of their voters, or they can do so by going to their voters to create special taxing districts. We're seeing more of that. We've seen that in Deschutes County, where they've created a special law enforcement taxing district, one for the unincorporated areas of the county and the other for the incorporated areas. We saw that last year. Clackamas County voters approved special taxing districts for libraries and agricultural extension services. The same was done for ag services in Douglas County in the May election of last year. And those have the advantage of establishing new permanent tax rates. And where the taxing districts are well under the tax limit of $10 per thousand, there's no compression that enters into it, and they get a new permanent tax rate. So we call out both of these approaches as our top recommendation to the counties for addressing this problem, to use as much as they can with the approval of their voters these mechanisms of local option taxes and special taxing districts to use some of that tax capacity, the unused tax capacity they now have. So that's that recommendation number two. And there's an example. It's one thing to say, as we could look at a Josephine County, for example, or a Curry County, whose tax rates are like 60 cents per thousand. Look at the statewide average for counties. The statewide average is 280. But it's easy enough mathematically to say, therefore, if that county moved to the statewide average, it would solve the bulk of its problem in terms of local resources. It's very difficult politically and practically and economically to double or triple or quadruple a tax rate all at once. In fact, not feasible at all. So we kind of looked around for what measures of feasibility we could use, and we looked at all the counties that have enacted local option taxes and special taxing districts and got a sense of the magnitude of the increase that their voters supported. And that gave us a range around 20%. So we looked here then at what would counties secure in the form of additional resources if their voters were asked to approve 10, 20, or 30% increases. And by the way, an increase of that amount in the county rate, which is only a portion of the total property tax rate, would translate into increases of 2, 3, or 5% for the taxpayer on the total property tax bill. And we came up with those revenue estimates, 15, 30, 45 million. Now, those are just fractions. I think 8%, 16%, 24% proportionally of the amount of revenue that counties will lose. So even if this recommendation were pursued and these actions were taken at the county level, we'd be solving a portion of the problem, and it's not one that we should ignore. It's an important portion, but it's at most maybe a quarter of the revenue gap that the counties will experience with the loss of federal forest funds. And there's that display in the pie chart form of how much of that gap would be filled. And so we went further then into looking at how the state and state taxpayers can help. We came up with a dozen recommendations for technical assistance and improved coordination that really don't require any new state money. We came up with 16 recommendations for increased state support for shared services. Public health is an example. DAs are another example. And they're all outlined for you in both the full report and the summary we've shared with you. We focused on particular recommendations for increased state support for economic development at the county level. And then also a certain number of recommendations for state-controlled revenues, where the state controls property tax exemptions is one example.
Excuse me for a moment. Yes, Representative Gasser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I'm wondering, you talked about how a local county increasing their local revenues clearly is only a piece, a very small piece of the solution. Did you have any discussion about tying state assistance for the larger portion of that to the counties stepping up on their own and maximizing whatever revenues they can and allowing their taxpayers to decide whether or not they wish to seek state assistance by increasing what they're paying at the county level so that they're contributing.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gelser, yes, we did. We discussed that. And we address it in part with the lead recommendation from our report, which I'll get to at the end, for the creation of a state-county planning council to work on what really should be 2, 3, and 4-year strategic plans at the county level that will get to that point. And now, we're not calling it out as a condition of state assistance, but I think it's a key element in what needs to be the ongoing state-county dialogue and planning and implementation of solutions.
Thank you.
So there's a display of what, if the state were to be able to afford, and we put a 4-year flag, a 4-year time frame on all these recommendations when we had our final meeting last October, and it was clear at that point what was happening to the state's budget situation. So all these recommendations that involve increased state support are conditioned on looking at that over the next 4 years. But even so, if we added up the cost for everything we call out in our report as potentials for increased state support for county services, you'd get something like $60 million in state general fund cost over a biennium. When you kind of focus that down on the hard-hit counties to look at how much of that would, what proportion of that would help them solve their shortfalls. It's, again, very, very similar to what we called out for the local tax effort, where it comes up at like 8, 16, or 24%. Here it's maybe about approaching 20%, even if you were able to afford to do all the things we called out in our report. So we're still solving less than half of the problem at the county level, which takes us to other forms of federal revenue sharing. For instance, under the original ONC Act for these ONC lands, mostly in Western Oregon, the legislation actually says counties should get a 75% share of their harvest receipts. Ever since the 1950s, in annual appropriations bills by the Congress, that's been reduced to 50%. So increasing, and actually all it takes is a budget bill that doesn't override the underlying legislation, then Congress then could give ONC counties 75% of the harvest receipts rather than 50%. And Congressman DeFazio has proposed that in past sessions. We do have a better deal as part of the 4-year reauthorization on payment in lieu of taxes. That's just not for forest lands, but for all kinds of federal lands in the country. That is helping. That's at a higher level now, and it goes on for 4 years. So increasing or maintaining those payments will be important. And then another one which has been addressed in legislation at the federal level and at the state level, it's Senate Bill 93, I believe, here in this session, would allow states to, as we do now with unpaid child support, to tap into the income tax refunds at the federal level that go to people who owe unpaid fines, court fines and fees. By doing that, we would bring more money into our state system, and the counties would get their share from, I think it's the CAFA fund, if I'm remembering correctly. Estimates range from 50 to 60 million for Oregon in a biennium. So it's a big number. And we've had good debate and good discussion about this on the Senate side, and we expect to see Senate Bill 93 moving forward. Now, it's still going to take congressional action, and Senate Bill 93 is the authorizing legislation for the state. But if, for instance, Congress were to enact this year, we could probably see something by the second year of our next biennium, where those resources come to Oregon and particularly help our state system and our county level court system and criminal justice systems. So again, a fraction of the problem, maybe with everything we're asking for from the feds, and here we have a lot less control, of course, but we could see maybe 14% of the problem at most of the shortfall recovered from those kinds of resources. And then finally, the big issue here is what can better and more productive management of federal forest lands do for our state economy, and in particular for county budgets. That bar on the far left shows you the amount of revenues that used to that are flowing at the that represents both the safety net amount, but that also represents what preceded this creation of the safety net, which was that level of harvest receipts from logging on federal forest lands. Bar on the left, calibrated to some of those highest years in the late 80s and early 90s, is how the safety net was originally set. But that next bar to the right, 0106 receipts, shows you the average revenue flowing to counties now. It's less than a tenth of what it was from the shared harvest receipts from the economic activity in those forest lands. The 2007 harvest was a little bit up, and then you always see higher sale targets. That's the next bar over. Then actually materialize. So there you see for 2008 what the sale targets were. We're not sure those are going to be met. And then over here at the two right-hand bars show you what was proposed by BLM as part of their Western Oregon Plan revisions and what had been promised by the Northwest Forest Plan. Now, the BLM's Western Oregon Plan revisions have been challenged in court. The governor has also filed an administrative appeal over compliance with the Endangered Species Act, but the governor has called out in his comments on this that he does support a level of harvest as outlined in the Western Oregon Plan revisions, about 500 million board feet a year from the ONC lands, which would help us get a level of resource back to the counties. It's probably at least 3 or 4 years down the line. And that's why we're going to have another debate in 2011, I'm sure, about continuation of the safety net payments at some level. But the larger portion of the solution here economically, in terms of economic activities in the counties and resources for county budgets, will come from better and more productive management of federal forest lands, we believe. Big chunks of that shortfall could be recovered, as you see here, looking at the various combinations of harvest levels, based on the old Northwest Forest Plan, based on the Western Oregon Plan revisions, based on a larger share of ONC revenues, continuation of Title III funds, which are separate from the safety net and support, for instance, search and rescue operations and those kinds of activities on federal forest lands. So our conclusions, there's no one solution, nor is there any one source for the solutions that we're going to need to avert what will amount to major fiscal crisis to the 24 hard-hit counties, as bad or worse than what you're dealing with in the state budget right now. And responses will have to come from every level, county, state, and federal, beginning with the state county planning process that we call out in our recommendation number one. This is going to be the crisis of the 2011 session, by all predictions. So our bookend recommendations between all these potential solutions are, number one, to create a state-county services planning council so that each of the counties can engage in planning and meet with not just representatives of the executive branch, as happened during the task force that I chaired, but also members of the legislature, and we call out in Senate Bill 78 Ways and Means members of the legislature. Every once in a while, we have Ways and Means members sit in on our task force. It really helped focus the discussion. And so we're hoping to create that as a more formalized process going forward. And then finally, we did do a lot of investigation into Oregon's lack of any kind of bankruptcy or fiscal distress provisions. Some states have chosen to enact bankruptcy measures. I think it's under Chapter 9 of the IRS, of the Internal Revenue Code, for the local jurisdictions. We chose not to recommend that because it would mean across the board higher borrowing costs for all of our local jurisdictions. But we did recommend that we do what other states have done, and that is have mechanisms in place for the use of financial control boards in the event that counties get to the point where, as Curry County did almost a couple years ago, send us a letter saying, help, we need a declaration of emergency. Well, it doesn't necessarily fit. The situation, as critical as it is, does not necessarily amount to an emergency as defined in Chapter 401 of our state laws. But it's the kind that should get our attention and should be something that we can respond to without having to wait for an out-of-control situation, which would constitute Chapter 401 emergency. So we're calling for those provisions in Senate Bill 77, and particularly focused on public safety. Because although public health and safety may be the top concerns, we know what happens when a county can't maintain public health. It reverts to the state, for better or worse. What happens in the public safety front is uncharted territory. So we're trying to chart some of that territory here and create a provision to deal with public safety services emergencies at the county level. So those are our recommendations, and I'm happy to take questions now, or maybe after Mike McCarthy gives you the county's perspective.
Are there questions now? Let's go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mike McArthur, the Executive Director of the Association of Oregon Counties, and we're trying to load a PowerPoint right here. I think you have a copy of my presentation on behalf of the counties. First of all, I want to thank the governor and Tim for their efforts on this project. As Tim said, it was precipitated by Curry County's contemplation of a declaration of emergency when they were really looking at a dire situation there, as the didn't appear that we were going to get a reauthorization. We think this is the most comprehensive study ever done of state-county relationships. As far as counties are concerned, first there was the Bible, and now there's the task force report. We have talked a great deal about the relationship between...
Both infallible.
The relationship between the state and the counties. We've talked about counties being departments, State Department of County Services, Sherman County branch, for instance, in my case. We've talked about the relationship financially with the 5520 project. I think this really takes it to another level in terms of describing the relationship the counties have with the state. It's both a reference. There are some tremendous materials that were collected here and work done over the course of the task force duration. In the back, particularly, you'll find the exhibits. There's a section describing each of the hard-hit counties and its situation. You can find many of your counties are there. There's a section that describes what legislative council says counties are required to do. Representative Roveland asked the question of legislative council, what are counties mandated to do by law? And it's quite an interesting report. We think it needs a little bit of refinement, and we're going to continue to work with Representative Roblin and Legislative Council to refine that. But there are other documents there in the back that I think you will find useful in general in your work here at the legislature. The author, of course, is Dr. Tim Nesbitt. Tim really immersed himself in this project to such a degree that we awarded him an honorary PhD from County College. he has become an expert on county government and county finance, and I think that's quite a tribute to Tim and his dedication to this work. The numbers, as Tim said, were compiled mostly by John Krosick, Yamhill County Administrator, John O'Shell of our County Road Program. Kevin Birch was a great assistance from the Department of Forestry on some of the timber numbers. The research and editing, I want to give credit to my staff, Laura Cleland, Eric Schmidt, Gil Riddell, who spent a lot of time working on this. We had a broad base of participation. The legislators who were named officially, Bates, Grodd, Representative Roland, and then others participated, like Senator Johnson, Representative Krieger, and others also helped. I was really impressed by the participation of the state agencies and their cooperation. We had state agency directors sitting at the table for most of our sessions, and they contributed a great deal to the outcomes. Four county commissioners, of course, were named as regular members. Governor's office participated, TM and others, and then we also had the League of Oregon Cities had a representative on our task force. The federal government can help. They did help, but I think there's a misperception about how much they helped. Essentially, we have less than two years of payments left. It's going to come over 3 years, but it's a very steep ramp down, and counties in the 2011-12 budget year is in the spring of 11, they will be planning a budget without any substantial federal payments. So we have a very narrow window here of 2 years, in my view, to deal with this issue. So there are no assurances, as Tim said, We think there'll be discussion in Congress about something going forward, but certainly we don't anticipate any kind of continuation of the program as it was in the past 7 years. There's the chart again. Of course, in that those red lines are our default position. And of course, with the timber market the way it is right now, they aren't selling timber. People aren't bidding on sales, for instance, that the BLM is putting up. So we expect that that's not going to get better soon. There are 53 recommendations in this report. Many of those have to do with state-county support for services, and, of course, given the state's position, that's going to be very difficult. So we put those off, many of those, until the 2011 biennium. But the state can be of help in the meantime. When resources are available, we hope that the state will look hard at its support for the A&T function, for instance. The assessment and taxation function is the engine that creates the property tax revenue that funds local government and funds schools, et cetera. And it is underfunded, frankly. And the counties support that with property tax, and there's a small general fund contribution to that, and we hope that that can be considered for a way for the legislature to invest to help generate further revenues. You will see in this session a bill asking for a $6 increase in the recording fee dedicated to assessment and taxation, and we hope you'll give that serious consideration. The other thing is avoid adding to the costs of local government. Avoid enacting any measure that would add administrative costs or other costs to local government. I just hope you'll take that in consideration in light of this difficulty that we're facing. protect our shared revenues. There's a long-standing agreements. We've talked to many of you about those, where the state shares revenues for counties. Deals were made. We hope that you'll continue to honor those. There are many prohibitions about the way counties can raise revenue. I just mentioned one of the local recording fee. Counties cannot raise that on their own. We're prohibited from that. There are other prohibitions. That's something you can consider, is to remove the prohibitions for local revenue raising. Finally, we really support the idea of increasing the resources available for transportation. Half of this problem is transportation related. Half of the $230 million that we're losing essentially goes to transportation. So we were underfunded to begin with, so supporting a transportation package is something that we heartily endorse.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Call.
Yeah, can I ask just a few things on that slide before? Just a couple of brief points. First of all, removal of local revenue raising measures, is that a task force recommendation that we go through and start to remove some of the preemptions that are in statute?
Mr. Chair, Representative Call, there are some called out and in the task force report. Yes.
And can I follow up?
Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you. Passing a transportation package, there's a lot of talk in this building, or some talk in this building, maybe not a lot, that one of the trade-offs for a transportation package would be to actually put a new preemption in the statute, making it impossible for local jurisdictions to levy a gas tax. I was wondering if you'd like an opportunity to make some comment on that now. You don't have to if you don't want to. I just thought I'd bring that up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Call, our mantra is always local control.
Thank you.
But I do understand the politics of that issue, and you know everybody's got their price.
I thank you for your pragmatism.
Other things that can happen to that are in the works, as Tim said, the BLM has adopted their Western Oregon Plan revision. That will now be decided by the courts. Did the BLM get it right? We'll see what the courts say. That will take time before that's resolved and before the timber harvests begin to levels begin to creep up as the plan revision called for. We had a federal forest advisory committee to look at the governor convened a committee to look at federal forest policy, and that advisory committee has made recommendations, and we're now in the implementation phase of that, working with Mike Carrier, the governor's natural resource policy advisor, to convene a group that will look to essentially enhance and try and get collaboratives around the state to work together on landscape area planning for projects which can go forward with a minimum of litigation. And we're trying to find resources that can help those collaboratives do good work. There are a number of them out there and working now, and there's been a fair amount of success working with the environmental community, local government, in the industry to try and develop plans that will be able to deal with some of the real problems we have with forest health. And so that's going to lead to more thinning, but thinning doesn't work unless you can have a little bit of commercial harvest along with it, because it just doesn't pay for itself. So these collaboratives are trying to put together projects that will get at some of these real problems we've got with the forests. Senator Wyden and DeFazio also work on federal legislation that will move forward thinning projects and try and get at the forest health problems as well as the revenue problems. But in the meantime, we need to start planning for this 2011-12 problem. And so Tim mentioned the Senate Bill 78, which calls for the creation of the planning councils. We think every county in the hard-hit areas needs to have a planning council now, and then it needs to be coordinated with a statewide effort where we're working with the state agencies and the legislature and others to say what is going to happen here when the come to the end of the time of these federal payments. You know, what's difficult about at the local level and the local contribution, there have been many efforts to try and pass local measures which would increase the revenues. Lane County has a long history of trying to do that. Their commissioners, for instance, really reached out to the public and had a great program about 3 years ago to increase the income tax in Lane County. And it lost, I think, 49 to 51. One of the reasons it lost was because there was a problem with taxing PERS retirees. But they came that close. And then there was an unfortunate history where they decided to put something out. The commission put it out to the voters or they were going to change their charter without a vote of the people, and that wasn't popular at all. And so then they lost like 70% for a subsequent measure. But there were about three property tax local options in the works when the federal government came along with the extension. And, of course, the people said, see, we didn't need to do that. The federal government bailed us out again. As long as there's a specter of the federal government stepping in and doing something, it's very difficult. But I think there's some new leadership in some of the hard-hit counties now. People realize that they need to help themselves as well. I think there's momentum toward that. But it's going to take a lot of leadership, and it's going to take citizen education about the problem there. So this is not exactly related. These additional recommendations don't come directly from the report, kind of indirectly from the report, but these are things that we've been talking about. AOC convened a group about 2 years ago to look at the property tax system to see if anything could be done in the way of a reform of Measure 5 and 50. And Gil may have talked to you about this in the past. We went completely through the system, and we had a really strong representative group who represent all views, and we turned the thing upside down and backwards and inside out and really couldn't come up with anything but a minimum assessed value. And I think there's a legislative concept coming that would set a floor on the change property ratio. That's one thing you could do. Of course, it's constitutional referral. I think this is my own personal opinion here. For the record, this is Mike MacArthur talking, not Association of Oregon Counties or their task force. But I think what we learned was that this system is so out of balance right now that any major change you try and make, there's such large winners and losers that it's just not doable. But what you have to do, we got here incrementally, you've got to get out of this incrementally. One thing you could do is allow local governments to adjust their permanent rates within a certain narrow limit. You know, we used to be able to adjust our levy 6%, but allow local governments to adjust their incrementally adjust their property tax rates each year, subject to referendum, of course. But if they had that authority, at least, and we could, you're saying essentially, this idea of permanent tax rates really doesn't make any sense. You can't adjust for inflation, and so I think if you had that ability to make those incremental adjustments over time, you could get some of those really low property tax rates back up to average, maybe, over time. One other thing that I think could happen in this, particularly the hard-hit counties, is they could find ways to grow their tax bases in ways that don't require a great deal of service. You heard the example about the subdivision in Coos County paying $200 a year, doesn't even pay for itself. We have another example from Tillamook County in the report that shows that really residential development is probably a net loser. But if you can develop some kind of industry that doesn't take a lot of service, that brings in high value, and the change property ratio, I think, is not as severely impacted on industrial as it is residential, I think you could see some of these counties begin to grow their tax bases. To that end, the governor has created an Oregon Solutions Project in the 6 southwestern Oregon counties to look at renewable energy projects. I and Bill Thorndike of Medford will co-convene that group in the next few months to look at renewable energy opportunities. Certainly the counties in the Gorge that have wind development have improved their property tax bases significantly as a result, and the wind farms don't take a lot of new services. So if you do something similar in southwestern Oregon, you won't have the tax rates to apply to it exactly as some of the eastern Oregon counties have higher tax rates, but it could help measurably, I think. And there's great potential there to develop that kind of industry. So that's a quick run-through of the county's view of this task force report. We commend its reading to you, and hope you'll have it in a prominent place on your shelves as a reference document, and I hope you'll seriously consider the recommendations that are moving forward in this session. There are about 8, I think, that we've got legislation that is for your consideration. So I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Oh, Representative Berger.
Thank you. This from a representative who doesn't have enough sense to stay out of the pit bull controversy, so I'm going to ask a very provocative question. Any consideration to county consolidation in your report?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, no. I think that has been studied and considered, and counties today work together where there's efficiency of economy of scale. Many counties don't have sufficient resources to provide mental health, for instance. So they go together with a neighboring county to provide mental health. For instance, in the mid-Columbia, it's Hood River, Wasco, Sherman, and Gillum provide mental health services through a combined consortium. So I think those efficiencies have been developed over time where counties work together to provide services. And people, I think the people like the idea of having their own county government.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Yes, please.
Thank you. I agree with you, and that's why, you know, it's like the pit bull thing. You don't talk to me about changing my county. I know where my county seat is, and I love my county. But I would also encourage that. I know it's a small piece of a huge problem, but in transportation yesterday, there was discussion about the governor's package, and one of the things that we could be doing is combining, like, resources between ODOT and counties when they're doing road work and that kind of thing. So I guess I would keep this idea of shared services, consolidation, also in your thoughts, aside from all these other good suggestions, because I think there are places where counties and the state and counties between themselves can share services and reduce overhead costs. Thank you.
Yeah, Representative Vance.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Arthur, is there a bill, I think you may have mentioned it, and I didn't get the number, that addresses the incremental change you suggested on allowing the counties to adjust their property tax?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, not yet.
Is there a list of, excuse me, follow up?
Yes, please, go ahead.
Are there bills that address some of the issues? I think I saw some of them listed. Is there a list of the bills that address some of the proposals in your report?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, I can get that to you.
Thank you.
I'll get it to the whole committee, Mr. Chair.
That would be helpful. Yeah, Representative Call.
Yes, excuse me, Mr. MacArthur. I'm just wondering. I have a bill being introduced tomorrow in this committee on removing tobacco tax preemption, and I'm wondering how measures like that help the hard hit counties. I guess what my question is is there really a capacity to raise significant revenue and for the smaller, hardest hit counties unless we take a hard look at the property tax limitations? I mean, are there enough taxing instruments out there that that local government in the hardest hit counties could actually, you know, pull themselves up out of their predicament unless we address 5 and 50?
Mr. Chair, Representative Call, I think it's nibbling at the edges. Lane County and Jackson County are not small counties. I think the tobacco tax there would be significant, but it doesn't get at the magnitude. I mean, you take $230 million out of the economy that was coming in from the federal government and try and replace that somehow. That's difficult to do.
Yes. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It may be something to do with this end of the table, but I had the poor sense to sign on to a puppy mill bill. And this also is a difficult question. I think one of the places that I struggle with this issue is I assume we all have a core belief that we want to serve Oregonians no matter where it is that they live in the state. But I think one of the hidden ripples underneath all of this sometimes is when we talk about partnership, to what degree these hard-hit counties and other places are willing to come to the table and be partners rather than waiting for the federal government or the state, in your words from a few minutes ago, to come and bail out. So recognizing that the property value base is low in many of these communities and counties, even within that, counties are not exercising the authority that they currently have to raise revenue, either because their leadership is choosing not to or their citizens say, we don't want to. And at what point does that balance come where the rest of the state needs to step up and take responsibility for some of these counties if those counties themselves aren't willing to step forward and open their checkbooks in order to help their own communities?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gelser, I think the report envisions a combination of efforts. That there are some things the state can do, for instance, supporting assessment and taxation functions, supporting community corrections, those kinds of obligations. But there are certain things that the local government needs to do as well. And that's where it takes public education and leadership at the local level to convince people that they aren't going to have the services that they need. Public safety isn't going to exist in a way that is good for business, for instance, unless the local people step up and pass a law enforcement levy. And so it takes the federal government, the state government, and the local governments all working together, I think, to achieve what we think is the basic level of service that we talked about in the Krosigk study. You need a certain level of revenue to provide the most basic functional services for mm-hmm. a county. And so that's going to take a lot of work by a lot of people to get there. But I agree with you that the local government needs to step up and provide its fair share.
If I could add to the answer, counties have been the first responders to this crisis, mostly by cutting the services they provide at the local level, but in part also by stepping up. And I mentioned some of the counties which have gone to their voters to enact local option taxes or special districts. They've cut about as much as they can, but they're still going to be the first responders, and our report puts them in first position, saying we expect counties and county taxpayers to step up and do what they can. And then we try and create this level of reasonable expectation for what can be done in a time frame like 2 to 4 years. So that's what we call out here. We stop short of the structural reforms that I think the Revenue Task Force dealt with. And in chairing this task force and in sitting in the Revenue Task Force, I was convinced that the beyond the instability of our revenue system at the state level, the biggest problem we have is the inadequacy, especially compared to the economic growth that's predicted at the local level to support services at the local level. And so I think that was my insight from the Revenue Task Force. My insight from this task force, in addition to what I just said, was that there's more unused tax capacity at the local level than I would have thought, and the handcuffs of Measure 5 and Measure 50 are less tight than I would have thought. We have those local option taxes. We have those special districts. A lot of potential there. And it's almost a distraction, I think, at times, just putting my political campaign hat on, to talk about other options. you know, we do say that we should look at the preemption on real estate transfer taxes. One county has those right now. We look at loosening the restrictions on transient lodging taxes. But in Tillamook County, they went to their voters with a road fee that was only in the unincorporated areas and was voted down because those in the unincorporated areas thought those in the city should pay their fair share. And then they went back out to one that was countywide, and those in the cities voted it down because they thought only those in the unincorporated areas. Too many choices can be a distraction. And so my conclusion politically is that we know we have a local property tax system to support these services. It's got some challenges. It has some significant constraints, but it has a lot of unused potential. And so we're, you know, front and center. Recommendation number two, right after the Planning Council, is counties should be the first responders to this crisis at the local level, and it should be in terms of reasonable tax effort. And there are ways to do that under Measure 5 and 50.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It would be of interest to all of us, I think, if we had a map that showed the amount of public land ownership in these affected counties mm-hmm. so that we could instantly see. Maybe you have that in your presentation or in the booklet. Is it in the booklet?
I believe there is such a map.
Actually, AOC's earlier report from 2 years ago listed the amount of federal land by county. Do you remember that, Mike?
Mm-hmm. 54% essentially.
You have it county by county, I think.
Uh-huh.
And some are quite a bit higher than that, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you. The point, I guess, is that it would be interesting if we could have in our minds the conceptual amount of private property that's available for this property tax we're talking about. And then to take it that next step, because this is a transitionary time, that is, moving away from any timber harvest to basically fighting fires, that loss of the opportunity to tax is not quite how we measure that. And so when we talk about raising those taxes out there, I don't know how you measure the transition from a logging community to a whatever John Day is now. And how we, I think you mentioned in your report that there's a difficulty to raise those property taxes any significant amount because of what we have left to tax. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know how to measure that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, I do know that only 44% of the land available in Oregon is available privately for taxes, and about 90% of that is EFU and forest land. So in a county like Grant, which is almost 80% public lands, you know, what remains to be taxed is rather meager, mostly residential.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bailey is next, and then Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that, in some sense, we're talking about a Venn diagram with overlapping circles, and on the one hand, you've got counties that are going to need to make some tough choices about some of the headroom that they may have on revenue-raising options. And on the other hand, we have state actions that are going to be needed to backfill some of the hole. But there's that sort of center area where the state and the county overlap, and my guess is that's a big reason why you're here today. And you've touched on this a little bit, but I want to make sure that I'm clear. As the county looks to its tough choices that it needs to make in terms of working with other portions of its revenue system aside from the headroom it has already in the property tax system under 5 and 50, where can the state be most helpful in targeting our efforts and in our own tough conversations and tough work that we have to do?
Mr. Representative Bailey, there are the area that is most critical, in my opinion, is the public safety area. That's where one of the discretionary areas where counties can make reductions. There's a partnership that exists between the state, the county on community corrections, and for the state to maintain its effort in community corrections, I think, is critical. Because that's where you'll see the problem first. That's what we start hearing reports in Josephine County. I don't know if you saw the news report about the the sheriff's deputy who advised the rural tavern owner, just don't shoot him in the back, as a way to deal with the fact that there isn't going to be any patrol coming soon. But there are other areas, such as assessment and taxation, where the county plays a key function in the state system. And we need to find ways to bolster that system so that we're maximizing the revenue collected. I think public health is the next one, where there's a partnership between the state and the county. Of course, you know, recognizing the state's fiscal distress right now, it's not likely that we'll be able to do much in any of those areas. But in the future, that's why we considered looking 4 years out where we might be able to go. Dr. Warner's analysis of the state revenue over time shows that the income tax will come back, and the state will someday be in better shape, and then maybe we can look at those services and how best to balance the partnership.
Well, Mr. Chair, so I would presume to say that it seems that in our role as the Revenue Committee, we have a number of different things, tools and policy options that we can look at. Obviously, working with the property tax limitations with the help of the voters, the preemption issues that Representative Call brought up, revenue issues, whether up or down, related to stimulating local economies and growth in other industries. We have the ability to have revenue for those kinds of services that you mentioned. Sort of in that mix, what I'm hearing you saying is having some help on some of those service aspects is what you need. Are there other places where we can focus our efforts as a committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bailey, yes, I think the along with the preemption of local revenue raising techniques, if you will, that's one area. Of course, tax expenditures is another area. I think that it benefits both local government and the state to continue to work toward streamlining what we do provide exemptions for, and incentives as well that may be offered that reduce the taxes paid. All those pieces that affect local revenues are important to consider.
Final follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
Chair, I'll indulge a comment. I described before coming into this informational hearing the county timber payment situation as a four-year ticking time bomb. I've now learned through this presentation that it's actually a bomb that's exploding in slow motion, and I think it is going to be a lot of tough work on behalf of this committee, but it's one that I think that all counties, including urban counties, really have an interest in helping to solve, because it all comes out of the same area.
You know, it's interesting, as we talk about this, all the counties are very different in many ways, but the outline that I've been hearing this morning as we talk about this is how similar they really are in some ways, with the priorities of public safety, assessment and taxation, and public health. It fits very well with the counties that I know best, in addition to others. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ben's comments and questions brought this up in my mind. We talked about the public lands in the counties, and some counties are extremely public land heavy. What I want to know is, what are the county's servicing responsibilities on public lands?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, big ones are those related to public safety. Law enforcement, search and rescue, for instance. And then I think the next would be transportation, access to roads leading to the public lands, and then depending on what type of public lands, the activities that go on those public lands, whether it be tourism or actual resource use, those services then have ripple effects into the more into the urban areas of the county.
Yes, please.
So what I'm hearing is that there's this large piece of the county where you have requirements to provide service and no revenue. Is that what I'm...
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, very little revenue. There is the program called the Payment in Lieu of Taxes, which is a federal program which was also extended when the federal forest payments were extended. Mm-hmm. I think it's minuscule in comparison, maybe $6 million statewide. But it's the federal government's recognition that there is some obligation for its ownership of lands within a county. And so it doesn't cover the cost, but it helps.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions, comments? Gentlemen, thank you very much for the presentation. I can tell you that I've been reading this report. I haven't finished it, but I do very much appreciate the layout, the way in which you present issues cogently and make recommendations that are very specific, as well as specific as you can get in boldface. I find that very helpful. I want to simply add, too, that the Revenue Restructure Commission did not really come up with any particularly useful recommendations on the restructuring of the issues involving local and county funding. And I think it's an indication of how difficult this subject is that it wasn't able to do that. We appreciate your presentation very much, and with that we'll adjourn the information meeting, and we have no other business until tomorrow, and we'll see you then. Committee is adjourned. Yeah.